This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
صحبه ومن والا رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. So inshallah, this is the last class for this course inshallah. And it's going to cover inshallah the last of the major legal maxims, which is al-'ada muhakkama, which means that customs are determinative. So this is one of the major qawa'id fiqhiyah and relates to many of the different chapters in fiqh and has a lot of, it's important to understand this qawa'id because especially in the West, I think sometimes people refer to customs and the customs here and there. So it's important to have an understanding of what this legal maxim means. So al-'ada muhakkama. Ada is what people customarily do, either from their actions or from their statements. And this is known. There are debates about the definition, and there are different definitions that exist. Even though, like, to get into like a long discussion about what does ada mean is maybe outside of the scope of this class. But the intended meaning of ada is that it is something that is commonly practiced between the people or amongst the people. And this maxim is taken from different ayat and hadith, which we'll get to, inshallah. خُذِ الْعَفْوَ وَأْمُرْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. Allah tells our Prophet in the Quran, خُذِ الْعَفْوَ, take pardon and forgiveness, and command al-ma'ruf, right? Al-urf. Enjoin al-urf, which is al-ma'ruf, which is essentially related to customary actions. And the intent of this, al-'ada muhakkama, that customs are determinative, does not mean, this is an important distinction, it does not mean that every urf, every customary action, is something we act upon. Like, it's not that we say, this is the custom of these people, so we have to do it. No, it's not that. But rather, the customs that exist, and which the sharia does not prohibit, and which the sharia does not contradict the sharia, those can be used to determine rulings. And so, in the end, al-'ada muhakkama means that it is made a hakam, it is made a source of judgment to determine rulings between people. So, let me ask you, from where we are here, if I take a taxi to go to the airport, how much would it cost? What's the typical cost?
$45,
okay. So let's say I call a taxi, and they come here, and I get into the cab, and he takes me to the airport. And I get to the airport, and he tells me, pay me $50. And I tell him, no, I'm going to pay you $20. What's the rule here? Now we're in an argument.
Pay the 50 because that's the price that's set at that time.
No, there's no set price. I got in the car. We didn't talk about price. We just arrived at the airport. We never talked about price. We arrive at the airport, he says, the price is 50, and I say, no, I'm gonna pay you 20 or 30. So now we're in an argument. So what happens here, is there anything in the Quran or the Sunnah that tells us what the price of a ride from Dar al-Tawheed to Pearson Airport costs? No. Okay. Is there anything in the language that indicates? Of course not. So here we find in the Quran, وَأْمُرْ بِالْعُرْفِ. Right, command the urf, the custom. And so we say, we look to what is customarily known amongst the people. So the custom here, you guys like said $45 is the custom, and we would say, okay, the ruling is $45. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَعَاشِرُهُنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. Live with them, with your wives, in ma'ruf, what is customarily known. And because of this, some of the scholars said, what is the right of a wife in a marriage? Like, we all know the wife should be provided for by her husband. But what does that mean? So they'll say it's dependent on what is customary for a woman like her in her city, in her social class, right? So, there could be someone who's really poor, who only her husband spends upon her a small amount of money, but they're poor. And there could be a woman who's married to a billionaire. Her husband gives her $20,000, $30,000 a month, easy. But she's a middle-class woman. So you say, okay, what is the middle class of her city? How much do they typically get? This is what is her right, Right? So, عاشروهن بالمعروف, live with them in معروف. It's related to the عرف. And this is, you know, we know this from hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, that a woman came to the Prophet and she complained to him that her husband was stingy and was not spending upon her. So the Prophet said, خُذِي مَا يَكْفِيكِ وَوَلَدُكِ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. He said, take what is sufficient, what is enough for you and your child, بِالْمَعْرُوفِ, from what is ma'roof, what is customarily known. So how much should she take? We look, what is customary for a woman like her, in her city, in her place? What's the kind of food she would eat? What's the kind of clothing she would eat? So what is enough for her? So if what is enough for her, let's say, is $1,000 a month, is it permissible for her to take $1,500 a month? Say no, she has to take $1,000. So the Prophet churned her towards aada, towards customs. So now again, I got into the taxi, we get to the airport, and we'll say the aada, the custom, is going to be the judge between us. And so what is the typical ride? It's $45, then that's going to be the cost. And so customs are determinative as a judgment, right? So we use the customs to make a judgment. But this has conditions. One of the conditions, like we mentioned, is that it does not contradict the Sharia. So if some people transgress in their country, they transgress in their city against the Sharia. For example, maybe there's a city, or a country, they make the women and the men inherent equal shares. Of course, the Quran says the opposite of this, or says it's different than this. So do we go there and we say, well, the custom here is that the inheritance is equal, boys and girls? No, this contradicts the Sharia. So because it contradicts the Sharia, this is an invalid custom. Or, you know, like we live in Canada, the custom, you know, maybe is people do not cover their awrah, both men and women, to be honest. So is this custom determinative? We say, no, this is a fasid, this is an invalid custom. I feel like I skipped a slide or two. I did. Okay, so let's stick here, I guess. Also, I'll go back to the other slide, inshallah, in a minute. What's also important is that the custom that we're talking about is definitive or probable in nature, right? So there could be customs that are rare, right? So, but those are not going to be considered. So for example, somebody goes to, I don't know, you go to a store in Mecca next to the Haram, and you see a phone, you say, how much does this cost? And they tell you 1,000. You're like, okay, I'm going to come back and buy it. Or I'll take the phone right now, I'm going to come back and pay you tomorrow. He comes back and he comes with 1,000 riyal. And the man says, no, I meant $1,000. So how do we determine that? So we say again, what is the aada here? The definite, the steady custom that's used here in this area, is it US dollars or is it Saudi riyal? Somebody might say, sometimes people will sell in US dollars around the haram. So yeah, but the probable, the overwhelming, the definite, the steady custom of this area is people are selling in riyals, right? So that would be the judgment. The judgment would be that it's a riyal and not a dollar. And the act of using dollars is what we would call nadira, it's rare. And the rare custom is not taken into consideration. As well, there has to be, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place. Yeah, these are the conditions. Sorry. As well, that there has to be nothing explicit to the contrary of it. So, the example we mentioned, I get into the taxi cab, and we said the common is $45, right? I get into the taxi cab, as soon as I get in from here, he tells me, I'll take you to the airport, it's gonna cost you $80. And I say, okay, he takes me to the airport, I say, no, the aada is 45, I'm only going to pay 45. Can we do that? We say no, because there was something explicitly said. Like he said in the beginning, it's going to be 80. I could have rejected, I could have accepted or rejected, right? Because he said something, we don't go to the aada. We don't go to the custom. I'll give you another example. You go to a mattress store or furniture store, and you want to buy a mattress, you want to buy a furniture set. And let's say it is the common practice that when you buy a furniture set, they will deliver it, they will assemble it, and that's included in the price. So you go there, And the store owner tells you, listen, I'll sell it to you, but look, I don't have any workers. So if you buy this, you're going to have to deliver it yourself and set it up yourself. Do we say to the store owner, no, the ada, the custom is you have to deliver it and assemble it? We say no, because he said explicitly, he clearly said, this is a condition, is I'm not going to set it up, even though this is the custom, I'm not going to do it. So because he says it clearly, then we don't use the customs to determine the issue, right? It's a good question. We'll say if it's, we'll get to writing in the future, inshallah. That's a good question. I'm happy you asked it. So this is important, that it's not explicitly stated. So this comes into play when it's not said. When I get into the taxi cab, he doesn't say anything. He takes me to the airport. I didn't say anything. Now we're having a disagreement. So now the custom comes into play, right? The fourth is that the custom precedes what is judged upon, meaning that the custom exists or it precedes the contract. So I'll give you an example. Somebody has a piece of land or a house or something. He says, I make this house a waqf. I donate it as a waqf, as an endowment, and for my children to manage it. So my children are going to manage this foundation, this house, this property, this money that I've given for the sake of Allah. So he says, awladi, my children. Now, awladi, waladi typically means boys or girls, right? Both. But let's say 50 years into the future, the word awladi means, like, the people have changed, you know, language changes over time, right? So in the future, 50 years in the future, people say, well, the word awladi or waladi means boys, and rarely does it mean girls. So they come and they say, look, this person left this to be managed by his awlad or his waladi or whatever it is he said. And today that means boys and doesn't mean girls. So we should not let any of his female inheritors manage the property, only let the male inheritors manage the properties. This makes sense? Okay, why do we, would we accept this or reject it? Exactly. This is a custom that came after he made his statement, right? So he made, when he wrote his statement, what was the custom then? So what matters is the custom at that time and before it. What happens after, you know, doesn't matter. So you can't say, well, you know, this word has changed, so now we're going to go back and change his contract. No, it doesn't matter like that. It doesn't work like that. Now we say, where are customs considered? Like, what is the place in which the ada is considered? Whenever there is something that is unrestricted in the Sharia, so whenever there is something that is unrestricted, mutlaq, in the Sharia, and there's no rule for it in the Sharia, and there's no rule for it in the language, then we judge based on custom. So this is important. There's nothing in the Sharia or in the language that presents a rule. If there's a rule in the Sharia, we don't look at the custom. If there's a rule even in the language, we don't look at the custom. But if there is no rule, then we look to custom. So I'll give you an example. In fiqh, this is Hanbali fiqh, you learn that you cannot drink from a vessel, let's say like a cup. If there's a cup of gold or silver, this is haram, you can't drink from it. Okay. Let's say you have a regular cup and it breaks. And the break, it's not a huge break, we want to weld it closed. They say, okay, you can weld it closed with iron, with plastic. You cannot weld it with gold, still haram, but you can weld it with silver. However, they say, this is if the break in the cup is dabba, it's a small break, yasir, so it's small, it's dabba, it's broken, like there's a break in it. Yasir means it's small, wali haja, there's a need. Okay. So now we understand what dab is, what a break is. It's broken. It can't be used unless we fix it. They said haja, need. What does need mean? That you're not doing it for the purpose of decoration or for beautification. You're doing it because you need it. If we don't do it, then it doesn't function. But they said the break has to be yasir, or the usage of it has to be yasir, meaning small. Is there something in the Sharia that tells us how many centimeters of silver we're allowed to use on a glass, on a cup? Nothing, right? There is no rule in the Sharia about what a small amount means here. Is there a rule in the language about what yasir, small amount, means here? If we open the dictionary, will it tell us exactly what the dimensions of yasir, of small, is? No. So there's no rule in the Sharia, and there's no rule in the language. So how do we determine what is small? We look at the custom of the people. We say, what is the adah? What do people consider to be customarily small? What's a big break and what is a small break? Another example, the Hanbalis say that blood is najis, right? But they say, يُعْفَى عَنْ غَيْرِ مَاءٍ وَمَطْعُومْ عَنْ يَسِيرٍ, that we overlook or we pardon blood that is not in liquid or food that is eaten. So it's not in food, not in liquid that we drink, but that is a little, yasir, for small amount. So a little bit of blood on your clothes, a little bit of blood on your shoes, a little bit of blood on your books, not considered najas. Again, what is little? Is there anything in the Sharia that tells us how many drops of blood? No, there's nothing in the Sharia. So how do we decide what is a small amount of blood and what is a large amount of blood? And they say, adah, goes back to customs. They say literally what disgusts the people, what makes the people disgusted, that becomes najis. But this is a custom, right? Maybe some countries, a lot of blood makes them disgusted. Other countries, a small amount of blood makes them disgusted, right? So another example is, well, tawaf. So one of the conditions of tawaf is al-mawala, that, you know, each circuit of tawaf follows after the other, right? So if you did one circuit around the Kaaba, and then you took a very long break, you waited for an hour, 2 hours, and then you came to do your second circuit, we say no. Because one of the conditions of tawaf is that it follows after each other. So now you have to start all over again. You can't do, this is my number two after I waited an hour. No, this is your number one now. You have to start from the beginning. Okay, they say you can have a small break in time, but you cannot have a large break in time. So what is a short break and what is a long break? Right? Is there a rule in the Sharia? No. Is there a rule in the language? No. So it goes back to the adah of people. What do people consider a small break? So if you did one circuit around the Kaaba, and then you went 5 minutes, you got some zamzam, you drank it, you came back and continued, say no problem. Everybody knows 5 minutes is a short period of time. But if you did one circuit around the Kaaba, then you went and you got dinner, and then you came back 2 hours, and then you want to do your second one, we say no, you got to start all over again, right? So based on the custom of the people, we know what's relatively short and what's relatively long. Of course, in the middle is where things get muddy, but based on the custom, we decide what's long and what's short. Oh. Okay, so I think I missed this slide. Okay, so we said the definition. Urf is where there is no nas. There's nothing specific in the Sharia or in the language. What does urf and what does ada mean? So you'll hear these two terms being used. We're talking about al-ada muhakkama, right? Customs are determinative. Another word you will use, you will hear often, is urf, right? Wa'mur bil urf, like we mentioned, right? Urf. So what do these two words mean, urf and ada? So one opinion is that they are synonymous. They mean the same thing. Urf and ada are the same thing. But others have other definitions for it. And there's more than just this. Some say they are different. They say that if it is an action, it is a ada. And if it is in the language, it is urf. So I'll give you an example. In the language, does anyone know what does the word jami' mean in the language? Like a gathering place, yeah, collection or the gathering of the place. But if you said to somebody, I'm going to the jama' today, maybe in Egypt especially, I'm coming to the masjid, right? Yeah. Okay, so there's a linguistic term, but the custom has changed to mean the masjid, right? So we will say this is urf, right? Urf qawliyun, right? But they would say this is urf because it's a custom in the language. Same thing when you say jami'a. Jami'a also means a gathering place. But then when people say jami'a, they mean university, college, something like that. So again, this is urf because it's language. But I'm wearing like a kufi on my head, right? This is a ada. This is a custom, right? This is an action that people do, right? Whether they wear a shimakh or they wear a kufi or whatever it is, this is a considered a ada. So in this definition, they would be two different things. The language would be urf and the action would be a ada. Why is this differentiation important? I mean, I've seen this before. Sometimes we only read the first definition. So the first definition is urf and ada are the same. Then the student starts to open some books of usul and he sees the scholars have written al-urf tukhassas al-aam wal-aada la tukhassas al-aam. That urf will specify what is general, but aada will not specify what is general. Which is, of course, you know, we talked about in usul, we talked about takhsis al-aam, like specifying the general. So if you don't know these nuances, so the person will read this and be like, what were these scholars saying? Urf and aada mean the same thing. Why are they making this differentiation, right? So, you know, of course, when we read things like this, that we get confused, we should give husn al-dhan to the scholars. Like, scholars are not ignorant. They understand what they're talking about, right? And the reason I'm saying this, of course, we're working off of the work of Ibn Rajab, rahimahullah ta'ala, and he makes this differentiation between urf and aada. Okay. So these are the categories of urf. Where did we go? The categories of urf. So the subject, mawdu'u, the urf is the subject. We said it's made up of statements and actions, right? So either it's a statement, words that have changed, or language, or actions that people do, or words that people are used to. If we look to the perspective of sahibuhu, we mean like, I wrote its owner, I don't know how to translate it, but really, what do we mean by this? We mean who are the people who change the custom of the thing, right? So I'll give you an example. Does anyone know in the language, what does the word salah mean? Does anyone know? Yeah.
It's sword, basically. Branching the sword.
Salah? Yeah, like that's the origin, that's more the root word, I think. Salah is dua in the language. We say salah is dua. But now if you say the word salah, what do people think? These salah. So from takbir to taslim, all the actions between that. Okay. Who changed this meaning? How did this meaning change? Who changed it? Allah. So we say that this is shar'i. The owner of it, the changer of it is the Sharia. The Sharia came and changed this meaning. So we call it urfan shar'iyyan. Urfan shar'iyyan. Okay, now the Arabic words rafa. Rafa means to raise something. Khafd means to lower something. Jar means to drag something, right? Okay, but all these words that I use, rafa, khafd, and jar, if any of you learn Arabic, they use these words all the time in grammar, right? To mean it to different things. So who gave these words additional meanings? The grammatical meanings. The scholars of language, right? Of Nahw and Sarf and all those. So we say this is urfun khas. This is a specific urf. So in a specific field, a specific group of people gave these words different meanings, right? They gave it the meaning of the grammatical meanings of rafa and jar. So if it's a specific group, we call it khas. Like there could be a word in usul we use has a different meaning than in other places, right? A word in fiqh has a different meaning than other places. Okay. The word jawal in Arabic means to roam, I think, to drift, to roam. But if you go to any Arabic country, you say, where is your jawal? Or have you seen a jawal? That means cell phone. Right? So everybody will know it as cell phone. Who did this? Who changed the meaning of this? Or who, use this language? The people, right? It's a general. So we say this is urfun am, right? Like everybody knows this. Right? It's not like a specific group of people or anything like that. It's everybody knows this. And you can go to an Arabic country and people don't know the rules of grammar. They just speak Arabic, you know, so they don't know what raf and jar and stuff. Some of them never went to school, right? They might not know that stuff. So, but this is, everybody will know it. Everybody will know what a jawad is, right? So it's not a specific group of people. It's not the scholars of a language or usul or something like that. So it depends on who is the one who transferred the meaning to a customary meaning. This is what is considered, you know, the quote-unquote owner of it. Also, we could say the acceptance of it. So urf can either be sahih, or it can be fasid. It can either be valid or invalid. So for example, you know, like we said, the Sharia commands to cover the awrah, and people in Muslim countries have become accustomed to covering the awrah. So we say this is a valid urf. This is a sahih urf, right? It is a custom, and it actually complies with the Sharia. Likewise, people in Muslim countries wear a kufi or a shimal or something like that. The Sharia is generally silent about this. There's no hadith about wearing a kufi. But this is a valid custom. It does not contradict the Sharia. People drive when there's a green light, and they stop when there's a left red light, and they slow down on a yellow light. Again, this is a urf, and it is sahih. It is valid. It does not contradict the Sharia. Fasid is what contradicts the Sharia. So, real example. Somebody marries their daughter to someone, and he tells the daughter to wear hijab. He tells his wife, the person who marries the daughter, tells his wife to wear hijab. And then the parents are like, well, the ada, the custom here is no husband tells the wife to wear hijab. They might be right in their area, in their place, in their social circle. It may be true that nobody tells their wife to wear hijab. Is this a valid urf? No. Because it goes against the Sharia, right? Then the extent of it being used by people. So we said either it is definite, meaning everybody or most people act according to it. So for example, you go to a store and you say, I'll purchase whatever it is. The custom is that the store will give you the product in the box and the box is unopened, right? This happens everywhere. So this is a definite custom. This is a custom that happens everywhere. Steady custom. Custom that happens everywhere, right? It's rare that this doesn't happen, right? Or it can be highly probable. Ghalib. Try and think of an example. Think like if you're in Saudi Arabia, and let's say two people in Saudi Arabia agree on a date. So they say, you will pay me X amount on the first of the 10th month. First day of the 10th month. And then they come back and one of them says, where's the money? And the other one says, no, I thought you meant... One of them says, you're supposed to give me the money because it's the 10th month of the Hijri calendar. And the other one says, no, I thought you meant to give it to you on the 10th month of the Gregorian calendar. So who's correct? We say, in Saudi Arabia, even though it doesn't happen all the time, it's not a definite custom, the probable custom in Saudi Arabia is that they're using the Hijri calendar, right? And the reason I had to use Saudi Arabia, because here we only use the Gregorian calendar, right? But in Saudi Arabia, more likely than not, they're using the Hijri calendar. Or it could be musawa. Musawa means it's equal, equivalent. So, I'm trying to think. There are some countries, I know, like for instance in the UK, before they left the European Union. If you went into any store, sometimes you'd be confused because they would use either the euro or the British sterling. And sometimes they would put both prices, but sometimes they would put one price and you weren't sure which one did they mean. So this is an area where like the countries are equally using two currencies, right? Sometimes they use their own currency and the US dollar equally. And so sometimes this would be considered an equal custom because you don't know. Because half the people use it this way, half the people use it that way. And this is what we would call an equal custom. And what we would say in this instance, like let's say, for example, two people are arguing. They agree to sell something for 1,000. One of them says it's US dollars. The other one says, whatever, it's Egyptian pounds. And they're arguing. And people, in fact, use it equally. Then we would say, al-bay' majhul. This is an unknown sale. right? Because neither are really at fault. And the final one is rare, something that's rarely used. So somebody in Egypt says to you, I will sell you a kilogram of aish. You guys know what aish is? Aish in Egypt is bread. But in Kuwait, people say aish and they mean, rice. So he tells you, I'll sell you, he's in Egypt, he tells you, I'll sell you a kilogram of aish, whatever, for $100. And then he comes and gives you rice. Right? So we say, no, this is a rare custom, right? This is a custom that's not known in Egypt. People in Egypt, they say aish, they mean bread. But you and people in Kuwait, they say aish, they mean rice. You can't use that in this place because this is a rare occurrence, this is a rare custom. We talked about this as well. Okay, so what are the maxims related to this? What are the qawa'id that are mundarija to this? So these are easy, inshallah, won't take us too long. The first one is إِنَّمَا تُعْتَبَرُ الْعَادَةِ إِذَا اضْطَرَدَتْ إِلَىٰ أَوْ غَلَبَتْ. So this is exactly what we were just talking about. The customs are to be considered when they are definite or probable. So this is a maxim, but it's also a shart, by the way. It's a condition. So the example we mentioned, you're selling something in a currency that's not often used. So we judge based on what is definite, what is probable. So you went to the haram, you told him 1,000. You came back with 1,000 riyals. He tells you no dollars. And we say, well, in this place, more likely, people are selling in riyals. So that is the custom that we judge by. So only when the custom is definite or probable do we judge based on custom. If the custom is equal or rare, then we don't judge based on it. Then we also say, al-urfu urfan kal-mashrutu shurtan. That which is customarily known is like that which is explicitly stipulated in the contract. So this has to do with contracts. And we kind of talked about this already. So the example of me taking the taxi to the airport, we judge based on the custom, right? We disagreed on the price, so the judgment is based on the custom. So this basically is saying what is customarily known, al-ma'rufu urfan, what is known by urf in customs, kal-mashruti shurtan. It is equal to as if we wrote it down in a contract, right? So the two people arguing in the airport about the cost of the taxi, and they come to you and they say, help us judge. And you say, the price is 45. And they both, or one of them says, this is not fair. And you say, al-urfu urfun kal-mashruti shurtan. This is as if you guys wrote it in a contract. It's as if it was signed in a contract. Because what is known by urf is as if it's a contract. So the same thing, like we said, going to buy the mattress, and without any conditions, right? The mattress owner didn't say anything, and he sold it to you. And then he said, okay, you take the mattress. And you say, no, you have to deliver it. This is the custom, right? So what is customarily known is the rule. Unless another condition has been made. Unless the store owner says, I can't take it for you before you even buy it. He tells you, I can't deliver it for you. The next one is al-kitabu kal-khitab. What is written is as what is said. And this goes, I think, to the question you're asking earlier. So this is always included under urf, because this is what has been customarily known by people. So this means that what has been written down has been customarily known by people to take the role of what is spoken by the tongue. And there are so many Islamic rulings tied to this that you wouldn't even imagine. Right? So for example, you send an email saying, I will purchase from you for X amount of money. And the person responds and says, I accept your purchase. And it was all by email. This is valid and people use it, and this is a considered as if you spoke to the person in person. Likewise, somebody sends an email to his wife or a text message. Now this happens. He tells her, you are divorced, in the text message. Then he says, look, all of the ahadith about divorce are about saying to your wife, I did not say to her, I didn't move my tongue. Sah, you didn't move your tongue. But I can... Right there. Al-kitabu kal-khitab. He can say his phone is hacked. Sahih, he can say that. But he can't. If he wrote it, then al-kitabu kal-khitab, right? What you have written is exactly as if you have said it. The next one, al-isharat al-ma'uda. So this is about sign language for a mute person, a person cannot speak, is equal to speech upon the tongue. So this is similar to what we just talked about. The sign language of someone who is mute is equal to the spoken word. And again, there are many rulings about this. So for example, somebody who is mute, if he nods, he's getting married, you tell him, do you accept this marriage? And he nods with his head. Is he considered married? Is he affirmed? We say yes, right? So the sign of somebody who cannot speak, that is largely understood by people, is permissible. And because of this, there's a ruling in the Hanbalis. It's haram to speak during the Jumu'ah khutbah, right? Correct? Is it haram to do sign language during the Jumu'ah khutbah? We say yes, it's haram. Because the sign language is like the speech, right? Even if he says, I didn't say anything, I didn't move my tongue, I just made, you know, gesture. Say no, it's haram. Yep. I think so. I'm not sure right now. I don't want to in the khutbah.
Yeah,
I believe so. But I don't want to say it for sure. So likewise, I said sign language in a marriage contract. He nods to the contract. This is like speaking. There are some exceptions here. This is an interesting exception I found. So they will say the shahada, the testimony of someone who is mute in front of a judge is not accepted. So let's say there's a robbery, there's a theft at a store, and one of the witnesses cannot speak. So he wants to do sign language to explain what happens. The fuqaha do not accept this as a valid testimony. Okay, what if he's the only witness? You say he's the only witness, what do we do? What do you guys think?
He writes it.
He can't sign it, he has to write it. And al-kitab kal-khitab, writing is like speech, right? But this is one of the exceptions they made. Yeah.
So what's the rationale behind not accepting?
I think the reason is because when you're interpreting the sign language of the person, there's a degree of, we're making an assumption, we're trying to infer what he means. So they're like, this is not that high, like this is, the threshold of evidence of his testimony is not high enough. Because what if the person translating it is not accurate? What if he meant something slightly different? And so that's why they'll accept him writing, let him write it down, rather than him signing it. Okay, and the last one, لَا يُنْكَرُ تَغْيِيرِ الْأَحْكَامِ بِتَغْيِيرِ الْأَزْمَانِ. There is no objection to changing rulings along with the change in the times. And this is very important, and it's actually in a way more broad than the main maxim that we talked about. Because this is basically saying the fatwa can change because of urf, because of the customs. But also more than just urf can change a fatwa. But why do the scholars put it under this maxim? Because one of the things that causes a fatwa to change is urf. So, example, somebody in Medina, he says the word dabba, and they mean by it himar, they mean donkey. And someone in Mecca would say the word dabba, and he means by it a horse. Okay, it's just an example. So a man in Medina says, and a man in Mecca, two men. Both of them say, wallahi, I will not ride a dabba ever again. So what have they sworn to? Say the one in Medina has sworn that he will not ride the donkey, and the one in Mecca has sworn he will not ride a horse. Even though they said the same thing. Why is the fatwa different for each? Because the urf for each is different. The custom for each is different, right? Now, what are the causes? What are asbab taghyir al-fatwa? What are the reasons why a fatwa can change? So the first, like we just mentioned, urf, the custom, the changing of a custom. I'll give you an example. So the scholars talk about khawarim al-muru'ah, the things that, I don't know how to explain it. Muru'ah is like the chivalry of a man, like the respectability of a man. So khawarim al-muru'a is like when a person has lost their respectability, right? They've lost their you know, chivalry and things like that.
Negates
that chivalry. So in some countries, if somebody's not wearing something on their head, it's considered khawarim al-muru'a. It's considered they've negated this chivalry of theirs. And there's rulings related to this, right? Like they might say, not, some scholars might say, you don't pray behind somebody whose muru'a is, you know, or at least they're not, they're given lower priority in leading a prayer and things like that. So some countries, because of their urf, their aada, if somebody's not wearing something on their head, like a man is not wearing something on their head, then they would consider this like lack of respectability. They've dropped their respectability. They've negated it. But let's say two men enter the same lecture hall. One of them is from a country like Saudi Arabia or one of these countries where they always wear something on their head. And the other one comes from the West or even Morocco or something like that. They don't often wear something on their head. One of them's wearing on the head, the other one's not wearing on the head. Neither of them has negated their murua because the urf of this person, the urf of that person are completely different. Does that make sense? The customs are completely different. So the ruling is different because these people have different urf, they have different customs. The next one is fasad al-zaman. So when the corruption of the times, the corruption of the times. So I'll give you an example. Imam al-Haramain al-Juwayni, who is a great Shafi'i scholar, and the Shafi'is permit women to show their face. And then there's a well-known rule amongst the Shafi'iyah, the woman can show her face. Yet he writes down, women should cover their face because of the fasad of his time. He's talking about when he's talking about. Likewise, Imam Malik said that it is makruh tanzihi, that it is makruh for a woman to travel with her stepson. Is the stepson a mahram to his stepmother? Yes, he's a mahram for her. He says makruh for a woman to travel with her stepson because he is hadith ahd al-hurma. Their mahram relationship is new. The mahram relationship is new. There's a recentness to the mahram relationship. And he said, because we're living in a time where there's too much fasad, I say it's makruh for the stepson to travel with his stepmother alone. The reason why I'm saying this as well, some people say, because we can change the fatwas, they're like, oh, alhamdulillah, we can change every fatwa from being haram to being halal. But if we can change fatwas, that means we can also change them from being halal to being haram. And you see Imam Malik does this, right? But the opposite is true as well. So taghir al-maslaha, the change of maslaha, can change the fatwa as well. Remember last week we talked about speaking against evil is fard, right? Speaking out against evil is fard. What if somebody says, if I speak out against evil, something worse is going to happen? And I'm definite or very highly probably sure that if I speak out against evil, worse is going to take place. So now we say the maslaha has changed, the benefit has changed, right? So because the benefit has changed, the fatwa will change. Another example, we're getting close to Isha. Try to end on, we have still the, we'll try to go quick. The scholars of the past will say if somebody has tuberculosis, this is if you read like Zad al-Mustaqna, one of the manuals of fiqh. If somebody has tuberculosis, they call this marad al-khawf, which means like life-threatening disease. And there are certain rulings that apply to somebody who has marad al-khawf, that they're life-threatening disease. So for example, if you have a life-threatening disease, you cannot give more than a third of your wealth to someone who's not an inheritor, to a foreign person, right? So somebody on their deathbed cannot say, give half of my wealth to charity. Not permissible. You and I, we can do that. We can give all of our wealth to charity. It's permissible. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu did it. Umar gave half of his wealth, no problem. But if you're on your deathbed, you're not allowed to do it. Why? What do you think? He can only do a third because he's on his deathbed and it's as if he's trying to not give his inheritance to his inheritors, right? So it's not permissible. So the scholars applied this to somebody who has tuberculosis. But طبعاً, when they wrote this book, if somebody had tuberculosis, almost for sure they're going to die. Today, there's different medicines, there's different healing. If somebody has tuberculosis, not necessarily they're going to die, right? So the fatwa changes because the situation has changed. the circumstances have changed, the maslaha has changed. Okay, we'll go very quick because it's almost prayer time. So, using the word dabba to refer to a four-legged animal, what kind of urf is this? A statement or an action? A statement. Okay, is it am or khas or shar'i? This is am. Most people use it. Is it sahih or fasid? Sahih. And what is it? Mutarid or ghalib? Sawi. Is it definite, probable? I think definite as well. Yep. Okay. Somebody says, Wallahi, I will not put my foot in so-and-so's house. And this means I will not enter their home, not just putting my foot into their house or inside their house. This is urf that is fa'li or qawli. Qawli, it's a statement. That when he says, I will not go into his house, his meaning is, yeah. And it is am or khas or shara'i? Khas? It's am. I think most people know this. If I say, I'm not going to set my foot in his house, it means I'm not going to enter his house. Like most people know this, right? And it's sahih or fasid, sahih and muttarid. Okay. Using the word salah to mean all the ibadat between the takbir and the taslim, what kind of urf is this? Statement or action? Statements, the word of salah. Okay, and it is am or khas or shara'i. This is shara'i. And it is sahih, of course. And it is ghalib in most cases. There could be cases where we use salah. Inna salatuka sakanun lahum, right? Allah says in the Quran, your salah is a source of tranquility for them. So there could be instances we use salah not to mean that. It is the common practice of sinful people that women will dress in short skirts or revealing clothing. So this is statement or action? Action. And it is am or khas or shara'i? You could say am, most likely khas, because we're speaking about sinful people. And it is fasid, of course. And it is, you know, some, I don't know, you could say probable, but some people do it. Okay, two people are arguing over the sale of the type of currency. How do we decide the currency? Which is the sub-maxim we are using here? This is ma'roof urf and kalmashut shartan. Yeah. I understand what you mean. But I think because they have not decided. Yeah, I understand what you mean. Okay, is the response of a mute person in his acceptance valid if it is by means of sign language? So did he accept the contract? What is the al-isharat al-mahmuda, right? Sign language. A person purchases a bedroom set and does not set a condition that delivery and assembly will take place. Is it required for the seller to deliver and assemble? Say yes, because al-ma'roof urfan kal-mashruuti shurt. Okay, a person sent a written message to his wife, you are divorced. Has he divorced his wife? Yes. Yes, why? Al-kitabu kal-khitab. Okay, the word aish means rice in Kuwait and it means bread in Medina. If a person swears not to eat aish, can he eat rice?
It depends
on where he is, right? So this is based on لَا يُنْكِرُ تَغْيِيرِ الْأَحْكَامِ بِتَغْيِيرِ الْإِسْمَانِ. Okay. A Saudi man entrusts another Saudi man to go buy him a thawb, and he doesn't tell him what type of thawb to buy him. The man goes and purchases a Sudani thawb. Is this valid? No, he's saying ma'roof urfan kal-mashruuti shurtan, right? So, because it's not set, he needs to buy him a Saudi thawb. He can't buy him a Sudani thawb. If he tells him to buy me a Sudani one, or if he's Sudani, then he can buy him a Sudani. But that's the last one, inshallah. Jazakumullah khair. Time for prayer.